Being a consistent winner with UltraScan is not hard once you develop the proper attitude on how to make it work for you. And I'd just like to take a minute to discuss this with you. First of all, I'll say very frankly that those of you who are saying that mental conditioning takes a backseat to knowing what readout to use, you're probably the ones that will never really make UltraScan work consistently for you and never know why. I've noticed that there's a very strong tendency for people to want to know what one readout will point to the winner. Are you going to play your top two Ultra plus variant horses, or just look at your raw Ultra ratings, or what? And people want to know what readout are they going to use. Now, this type of rigid approach will give you some good wins, and you'll certainly be better off than most of the people at the racetrack. But you'll never be able to approach that 70-plus percent mark that a lot of the PERCO members are consistently getting. Every one of the PERCO members that I've spoken to, they have one thing in common that makes them winners, and that's their willingness to, one, investigate what readouts are currently working at their track, and I emphasize at their track, and two, being fluid enough to change what readouts they're going to be playing when they see that the conditions demand it. Now, what I do myself is, for every horse that I have entered in the race, I rank that horse by every single readout that the computer gives. So I'll know for early scan, late scan, raw ultra, ultra plus variant, whatever, if that horse is compared to the other contenders, if he's 1, 2, 3, 4, or what. Then, once the race is done, then I take a look at the winner of the race, whether or not I had that horse picked or not. And in fact, in particular, if I didn't have that horse picked. And I take a look at the rankings, how he did in each one of those categories. And this is the model of the winner at your track. And very soon, you'll see that a pattern starts to spring up. With that, you'll see that the winners will have better figures in one or more of the areas than others. And you just go with those figures. Now, this is how you make an update a Brohammer model. Now, how often do you update your figures? I do it after every single race. Actually, now I already have my computer printout, so I have on there the rankings of each of these horses. And so after the race is over and the results are read, right in the bottom of my program, I write model, and then I put down what the rankings for that winning horse are. You know, let's say, you know, 1, 1, 3, 4, what have you. And so this way, that now I'm taking a look and just noticing, race by race, what the winning horse is strong or weak in, and you update your figures and your handicapping accordingly. And at the very least, at the end of each racing day, then go through again and analyze those winners, and I'll say again, in particular, the winners that you didn't get, and see if you can spot that pattern. When you do this, you'll find that you are going to become razor sharp as to what the current winning factors at the track are. My main point in starting with this before, which I will in a minute, discussing how exactly I'm playing with UltraScan and what factors I am tending to look at, is that I just wanted to caution that if you take as gospel anything that I say or anything that Howard says or that anyone else says, you're bound to go wrong eventually. No matter, you know, how good the sources that you have, it has to be your own source. You have to do your own research, your own investigation, because the track is going to change, for one, and this program is written for all over the country, and so what is going to work at one part of the country may or may not be the winning factor at another racetrack. So now, the beauty with UltraScan is that you have less to consider than you ever did before. Now, to do precision handicapping, you have to input far less information, and your interpretation is a lot easier because there's less readouts for you to have to consider. The only thing I'm saying is that play your readouts intelligently, you know, with some personal judgment that you've cultivated, and don't just play it blindly. Now, the handicapping steps that I take are pretty basic. Start out by just making your eliminations so that you're working with the true contenders in the race. And then I pick my appropriate pace lines for the horses I want to consider and enter the pace lines in. Now, you have, as I'm sure everybody knows who's read through the manual, that you have a few options with the computer, and this is one thing which the people that I've talked with does cause some confusion. The first option, which is the most common one, is where you make no adjustments at all. And this is where the computer will automatically take the pace line of the pace line race that you're working with, and it'll equalize all of them. Now, I'll just say, remember that the purpose with what the computer is doing with this, and this is the basis for how UltraScan is working. When we were working with the basic method, to do precision handicapping there, you would have to make your own adjustments, your own variance. We would be adjusting for track variance, daily racing form variant adjustment, distance adjustments, and so on. Now, why we were making those adjustments was because we wanted to be sure to be in our handicapping the horses that ran the race and not the track or the track conditions that the horse ran over. So we were equalizing all the pace lines of the races that the horses ran, and that we would way we would just be analyzing the horse's own race. So the key word there is equalizing, and before we were doing that manually, and now the computer is just doing it automatically. It's taking those pace line races and bringing them all to one specific given constant. And by doing it, does that by adding its own variant in. So most of the time, under most conditions, luckily for me and for all of us, we can get away with just making no adjustment at all and taking that computer-given adjustment that it does automatically. And there's only a couple of exceptions that I'll get into in a minute that I find where I have to deviate from that. The other option is where you can take the computer-suggested adjustment, and that's where the horse is going to be adjusted to the pace of its own pace line race. And as Howard suggests in the manual, that is most useful when you have a mixed bag of horses shipping in from different tracks, all thrown in together in today's race. Now, and your third alternative then is where you make your own adjustments like you did before when you were working with the basic method. Now, from my experience, I find that, again, most of the time, I don't have to make any adjustments at all. The exceptions to that, where I do make some adjustments, are, one is if I have a sprint horse going into a route race today, and there you have to put a penalty on because that sprint horse, his figures are going to be inflated. They're going to look extra good. And so I take the sprinter route adjustment. Now, you can work with the ones that are originally in the manual. I keep a set of energy pars, and so I update them myself. Howard does recommend, he says that if you aren't keeping pars, that 0.35 per half furlong is a fairly average constant throughout the country. And I tried that when I was in New Orleans at the fairgrounds, since I didn't have pars for there, and that seemed to work fine. Now, it's my experience that here in the New York area, that if I have horses that are shipping in from local tracks, like, for instance, coming from Keystone into Aqueduct, or you know, any of the nearby tracks within the realm of this the circuit, more or less, and you know, these are all fairly early speed tracks, I don't have to make an adjustment there. I've experimented in a lot of different ways, and I find that I'm getting excellent results, still making no adjustment, just with a computer internal adjustment. And so since it works and it's the simplest way, I'm going with that. Now, people that I've talked with from California say that they're finding that out there it seems to be working best with the computer-given adjustments, where it's suggested to the pace of its pace line race. So again, I'm going to repeat myself and say investigate a little bit and find which works best for you and go with that. Now, another option that you have then is where you do make your own track variant adjustments, and I sometimes will do that also and put that in. I find that that's more helpful if I'm dealing with a horse shipping from a track that's really unknown to me. If I have a horse shipping from Midwest or a California track that I'm not familiar with, so there, rather than just entering in nothing with just an internal computer adjustment, I'll do a track variant adjustment from the pace line of the race of that horse that's shipping in, and I'll put that adjustment in under the open adjustment. Now, I have to emphasize to you, remember, whenever you do put an adjustment onto this program, that then your Ultra Plus variant rating becomes, I won't say it's meaningless, because I still look at it, but that is very secondary. It's not a true readout anymore. you've now adjusted it, and the ultra figure of just the ultra scan, you know, previously that was raw, but now it's an adjusted figure because you've adjusted it. And so that's going to be the one that you're going to tend to look at more. Now, one important thing to watch out for is anytime if you see a fairly big discrepancy between the ultra plus variant rating and the raw ultra rating. And when I say discrepancy, not so much even as far as with what the actual numerical figure is, but in the rankings. If I have a horse that's, let's say, one or two in ultra plus variant, and that same horse is maybe four or five in the raw ultra, now that's a red flag, and that means I have to take a good close look at that horse. And one of a few things is the case there. That does mean that that horse received a very large variant bonus. Now the question is was it a valid bonus or not? Remember, the computer can't think. It's just equalizing those pace line races. And so a horse that ran on a slower track with a racing form variant on that day was high, that horse is going to get a very high variant rating as a bonus. A horse that ran on a very fast track will get very little variant bonus or possibly even a penalty. But again, the computer can't tell if the track was off that day or if it was just a plain slow race. Now, so what I do is then after I have all of my contenders ranked, I'll generally start by looking at my top ultra plus variant horses and seeing if there is that discrepancy. And if there is, then I'll take a close look at that pace line. And if I see that the track was sloppy or had a high variant or something to that effect, then that means that the track was off and the horse deservedly got that variant bonus. So in a case like that, as long as I saw that the horse was pretty much on the pace, you know, that he was competitive in that race, but just that the times were slow because of the track conditions, then I'll keep that horse in, and that's acceptable. On the other hand, though, if that horse, there was nothing wrong with the race that day, the racing form variant was average, there was nothing to spot that should be causing slow times for that race, and that means that that's all that it was. The times were off, and the computer gave it a bonus. Now, that horse probably was not a contender and shouldn't have been entered in into the race anyway, but you'll know for sure when you do see that discrepancy in that case. And then what do you do with that horse? You just toss him out. And so he might be your top ultra plus variant horse, but still he didn't deserve to be that, and so you do have to eliminate him. A lot of people feel very uncomfortable about being too free with their eliminations because they're afraid that they're going to eliminate a possible winner, or if they're playing the exotics, eliminating a place horse. And I can definitely understand that. But you do have to keep in mind, if you're going to be entering in a lot of horses in the race, you have to remember that you are probably going to be entering some in that shouldn't be there. And so you have to then have that discrimination for noticing those horses. And you'll always see them pop up, those horses that don't deserve to be there, with the inflated scores by that discrepancy between the raw and that adjusted figure. So just watch that, and you'll spot it when it comes, and you'll still be right on top of who the proper contenders are. Remember in that same light that very often you can be having horses that with a very low average purse value for compared to the contenders in the race. Now these are low class horses, and they might have at the class level that they were racing at before, they're taking a hike today, a class hike. Now they might have previously been very competitive there and run a pretty decent race, but in terms of a class, they just cannot be competitive. So you put those figures in, and those horses will be getting quite a hefty bonus because the lower class horses aren't running as fast as today. So that horse may come out as a top-rated horse. So again, watch that in terms of not just slow times for the race, but in terms of with the average purse value, does that horse really deserve to compete against today's competition? Besides this, the only other real hint that I can think to give is to be sure to watch if there's a difference for which winning factors to go with between sprints and roots. I'm finding around here anyway, in the New York area, that generally speaking, the raw ultra figure tends to be a bit more predictive in sprints. And the Ultra Plus variant tends to be a bit more predictive in roots. And the reason for this is probably because in a sprint race, since it's covering a shorter distance, just that strong burst of raw speed can very often carry a horse. But when the horse has to go that longer distance, then more of the vagaries of both class and track variant and so on, the stamina, the pace of the race, is going to be a factor. And so, at least, you know, this is my own rationale behind that, but my figures seem to bear this out, that I'll generally will go with that Ultra Plus variant in the roots and raw Ultra in the sprints. But again, don't take my word for it. Like with everything else, try it out yourself, see what does or doesn't work. Just remember that it's inflexibility that's the worst enemy of an otherwise successful handicapper. And as long as you do have that proper frame of mind, you're working with the single best tool that there can possibly be, in my feeling, towards successful handicapping. And I won't wish anybody luck, because you don't need that with UltraScan.
It's May 1st, 1985 again, and I'm going to comment on what Barry just said. He suggested you used raw UltraScan in sprints, making the necessary user adjustments based on your energy profile, and use UltraScan in variant in routes. That's a pretty good rule of thumb. The reason being is that right now on the tracks where everything is pretty dry, we can look forward to fast tracks with minimal daily variant changes and fluctuations, except in those places where it rains hard in the summer and you do have them. But under ordinary circumstances, you're looking at fast and dry and not too much vagary in the daily variant. Consequently, you don't want to use UltraScan in variant, especially in a sprint race. Let me explain why. Sprint races are run far more close to a mean average final time than our route races. If it's a 110 track, your good sprinters will run within 3 or 4 fifths of a second of 110 if they belong in that particular race, if it's a 110 type of race. Consequently, you're not going to have horses running 112, 112 and 4, who are equal to horses running 110 or 109 and 4, what have you. Therefore, you're looking at the pure velocity figures more than you are figures that represent deviation in the track surface. That's why Barry said that he finds that using the raw UltraScan in sprints is more effective. We've known for some time that pace figures and matchup figures and percentile relationships of the horse's pace to the pace of the race are far more important in routes than they are in sprints. Routes are far more predictable using our pace methodology than our sprints. When I say far more, I'm talking about 4 to 5%, but that's about one winner more in every 20, because routes essentially are pace. Routes are not final time in any sense of the word. You will find a greater deviation in the final times run at route distances by horses of equal class than you will at sprints. That's why I will hearken back to what Barry says, the UltraScan and variant rating is more important in routes, even in the summertime, even when the tracks are hard and fast. Because pace is everything in a route. It is foremost in a route. It's important in sprints, but certainly not so much as it is in a route. The longer the race, the more important the pace, if you'll pardon the poem. But let me augment what Barry said with a little recap of a week we spent in Las Vegas. The week we spent there was spent primarily to answer your questions, to come up with answers which we could address on this tape and on the UltraScan answers manual. The object was to find an optimal way to use UltraScan that would reflect the most predictive method at each track. And to do that, we had to go to Las Vegas, where we were given an assortment of tracks, up to 7, to play on any given day. we went over there and we said, which, if we were a total children in the dark with absolutely no insight, no background, no knowledge, which method of using UltraScan would pay off the most frequently, the best odds, at all of the tracks we have here at our disposal? There were seven. Now, the first 2 days we were there, I did not make any wagers. I didn't handicap to win. I handicapped what was winning. I merely took the results of every track available on the boards over there, took the winners, and then handicapped the races and found which way of using UltraScan produced the most winners. Now, this was March 25th through March 30th. Some of the tracks were still off, and some were running fast, and some had a day of rain and a day of fast. It was typical transition spring weather across the United States. What we found to be the most optimal was entering yes. Do you want to make adjustments now? Yes. And then entering the adjustment figures that your computer gives you. Now, each computer has a little different way of doing this. From the big computers, which you say yes and it gives you the numbers, then you enter them secondarily, to the handheld computers, which if you say yes, it gives you the indication that if you want to use those, you say W for open and O for third fraction. However your computer asks you to do it, the ultimate answer is yes. Then you use both readouts, both UltraScan and UltraScan Invariant. You say, well, how can you use two readouts? Well, you can. They're going to be much closer together, incidentally, when you say yes than they would have been had you said no, and we're letting UltraScan Invariant take care of the strange circumstances that might be on that track at that particular day. But we kind of averaged them, or we played the highest of the two. Let me tell you some of the results we got. I was playing with Glenn Smock as my partner. Glenn had five straight Quinellas that paid either the maximum or within a few dollars of the maximum. The maximum in Las Vegas is $202 on a $2 Quinella bet. That costs you $6 to play three horses. You get $202 payoff. Even if it was supposed to pay $250 or $300 or $400, they will pay $100 to $1. He had two like that. He had three that paid over $50. And then subsequent, he had some smaller ones, which we don't include in those five, of the $24, $41, $36 range. I missed two of his big ones because I threw out a horse that came in second based on some of the concepts that Jim Bradshaw has talked to you about in eliminating horses. The problem with being too astute at eliminating horses is that you will frequently eliminate the place horse. Telling a little story on Jim Bradshaw and Michael Pozzola and Bob Purdy, they are so good, so astute at eliminating contenders that they had, and this is astounding, they had 17 out of 21 winners on an average. Of each 21 they won 17, but in one instance they had no place horse. So everything they made on the win end, being on the Quinella end. So Glenn and I decided to come to their rescue and find a place horse for them, so in concert we could win the Quinellas. Well, Glenn proved to be the past master at that. He did much better than I did. He had two place horses I did not have, and he had the place horse in virtually every race. Because we were not quite as persnickety about eliminating horses when we were seeking the place horse. Quite frequently, the place horse will be the horse with lower class and the higher pace figures, or the horse with a higher class and the lower pace figures. The beautiful thing about playing Quinellas in Las Vegas is, first, it's cheap. You can get 3 and 4 to 1 odds on an average for a cost of $6. If you want to put four horses in, it costs you $12, a very inexpensive wager, which they incidentally call a sucker bet in Las Vegas. We call it the greatest thing that ever came down the pike. because it really is a source of income over there that you just are not afforded at the track unless you put in the full exacta fee. And out here, that's $5, or it costs you $30 to play a three-horse exacta. And remember, exacta races are carded for exactas. In Las Vegas and Reno and other off-track legal places like that, they are not carded as exacta races. They are just any race that comes along with six or more contenders. You can play a quinella for $6 or any thing you want to go up from that. So what we found was that by saying yes and making those adjustments was the optimal way to play UltraScan. Are there exceptions? Yes, there are. A good example of that was the opening day of Hollywood Park, the last week of April, 1985. Had we said yes in every playable race, of which there were six, because there were three maidens that day, we would eschew, we would have won five out of the six remaining races. Had we been very choosy about saying yes or no, and we would have won four out of the six had we just said yes, carte blanche. There was a sprint race on that day to which we should have said no. We did not. We lost the race. The reason we should have said no was quite obvious. Every sprinter in the race who was a true contender came off of a very fast line. Therefore, we were dealing in velocity matchups, not matchups that were based on different surface conditions and different percentile relationships to the pace of the race. We were dealing strictly with horses from a fast track running fast times. When we said yes, we adjusted the horse that won, and incidentally a horse that placed, both of whom paid very high prices, down to our third and fourth choices. When we said no and entered their velocities raw and put no for the adjustment, 0-0, they came out 1-2. Now the question that comes to my mind is, was it better to have just said yes and lost that race, or to impose upon you the necessity of saying yes sometimes, but knowing the difference from when you should say yes and when you should say no? Now that's up to you. It should be quite apparent to you that if saying yes is going to give a slower horse an advantage, then you should say no. If you feel that all the horses are running at just about the same fractional and final times, you say no and let them go raw against each other's velocities. If you think that there are extenuating circumstances which justify a slower horse being matched against these faster horses, you say yes, and he will be properly matched against them. He'll be properly adjusted and properly balanced. Now, the use of no becomes especially important, hearkening back to what Barry said, in sprints, not so much in routes, even at our faster tracks. This problem may never arise at your track. Bear that in mind. Unless you're playing Southern California or some hard, fast, dry track where sprint times are run exceptionally fast, you may never have to say no. Bear that, especially in sprints, you may do better by saying yes. And the way you tell that is when you've eliminated the non-contenders, you have it down to four or five horses. If you find they're all running within about a fifth of a second each other at the second call and in the final time, say no. Enter 0. Always remember, though, when you say no and there's a distance change involved, you will have to enter the total energy distance change figures from your PAR generator program, from your track profile. You cannot say no when there are distance changes involved. When you say yes, of course, the distance changes are taken into consideration and automatically adjusted. So when you say no, it imposes upon you the necessity of making precise energy adjustments to equate horses going from one distance to another. Not so important from 6 to 6.5 and maybe 6 to 7 and in those 8.5 to 9 furlong. Watch out for the mile. The mile is run in an entirely different fashion when you say no. It's adjusted automatically when you say yes, but when you say no, be very careful that you do not equate mile times with mile and a 16th times without making an adjustment. If you say no, then the onus falls upon you to make proper energy adjustments based on your track profile. You can say no and get just as good a result as the other fellow saying yes, a little bit more work, and perhaps more satisfaction. More about that when we go to the next side of this tape.